Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Season 3 of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn. On this Saturday, September 11th, 2010, and that's where we're going to start. We're set with that date, September 11th. Certainly, we will get to all the sports. Big football weekend. We'll get to that. We're doing 90 minutes. We're going overtime, doing some overtime this morning. But where were you September 11th, 2001? And, you know, I think back to that date. I think about that date. I mean, there are certain dates that just stand out when you think about them in terms of not only American history, but just world history. Certainly, D-Day is one of them, June 6, 1941. Please help me, God. If I'm not right on that one, hit me up on Facebook. Hit me up on Facebook or Twitter or twitter.com/WilliamGerald. Make sure I'm corrected, but I believe June 6, 1941. But for my generation, September 11th, 2001 is a date that, you know, you'll remember and I'll remember for forever, as long as I live. And I'm thinking back, and I remember like it was yesterday in college, Temple University, and I was not fully aware of what had happened. Woke up, you know, had a mid-morning class, had some time before the class, didn't turn on TV. Okay, that's why I used to say, well, how can you not be aware of what happened? I did turn on the TV when I woke up, which is unusual for me anyway, unusual for me during that time or any time for that matter. So that happened to be the same day. I had some time before class. Happened to be the same day, ironically, that Jay-Z released the Blueprint. So we went to the record. It was on a Tuesday. Went to the record store and picked up the Blueprint. Come back on campus, and nobody even had to say anything to me. I walked into the sack. Again, I had a lot of time before class. Walked into the sack, and it was just a buzz. You could feel something. I don't know anything was wrong, but you could just feel something. It was a buzz that was unusual for a Tuesday afternoon or Tuesday morning in September. You know, being on campus, certain days you have a day of buzzes, whether it's spring fling or you know, first day of class. Yeah, that's a different type of buzz. This was a buzz that you could kind of sense wasn't good, but you didn't want to go out on a limb and say, hey, you know, assume anything was wrong. You know, I don't not want to think negatively, just assume something negative happens. But that turned out certainly to be the case. And I can remember just, you know, first of all, just being in pure shock about it. Once I gathered all the information and saw what had happened, of course, you know, classes, I went to class, but it was a waste because, you know, my professor, journalism professor he had to do his own, you know, he was on assignment, so he was running and ripping, doing his thing for, you know, trying to cover this story, and again, to be in school or to be in school during that time, it was like your whole world stopped. You know, you're a senior in college, you're thinking about the future, thinking about you're going to have a job, well, you know, what kind of job you're going to have. You're trying to enjoy your last two semesters, knowing that, you know, this is it. You know, this is the college life will be over. Have to become an adult. You're not thinking about somebody coming into America and, you know, blowing up, basically destroying two landmark buildings in New York City. I mean, and mind you, this, you know, we had Oklahoma City in '95. We had the World Trade Center in '93. You know, with that whole ordeal. But this, again, this was domestic, and again, this had a personal feel to it. And again, let's not forget, not only New York City, but of course, you know, the Pentagon, Washington D.C., the plane, you know, the passengers in the, you know, in the Pennsylvania, you know, who over in Pennsylvania, how heroic they were for doing what they did. And it was, again, it was the first time I felt, it was the first time I felt as bad. I've never had that kind of feeling outside of a family member passing away of my own, in terms of feeling the kind of pain and the kind of hurt I felt for people who I didn't know, in regards to, you know, all those people who died on that particular day, the thousands that died on that particular day, and just, you know, it just took over your world for about, you know, you know, the world changed after that, of course, but for, I mean, you think about that week. I mean, then you had to basically sit through this for a week. As far as coverage went, there was no football that weekend, none. All the games were canceled. NFL, no NFL. Think about that. Think about how popular the NFL is right now. As I get ready to do a basically 90 minutes of almost NFL and college football, the NFL got shut down for a weekend. Could you imagine that? The NFL got shut down for a weekend. You had movie premieres being postponed because of, you know, if they had anything to do with violence. I remember, you know, a couple of college buddies of mine was on that weekend, or maybe a couple weeks after, was supposed to go see Training Day. You know, we ended up going to see Training Day, but and we ended up going to see it in, you know, in early October, because it got pushed back 2 weeks based on the fact that it had a violent element to it. This thing affected every aspect of our lives, and still does to this day. But for that particular week, again, it just, I mean, it stopped everything. It stopped everything for everybody. And again, it reminded you that, you know, things could change within, in a heartbeat. And again, as a college student, you know, you're walking around the campus and you're seeing, you know, looking at how Temple is a very diverse campus, and you're seeing, you know, you're seeing people, and again, unfortunately, you know, people got miscast as far as, you know, a Muslim faith, you know, if you had any kind of Arab, you know, look about people, looked at people funny, they were Arabs, and it was unfair, and again, it was totally unfair for those people, for people of Arab descent, Muslim descent, to get cast in the same, you know, in the same light. Very unfair. It is still unfair to this day. But unfortunately, that's what happened when this all went down, and, you know, on Tuesday, September 11, 2001. And again, I just remember the whole, you know, I just remember the New York population, how big of a New York population Temple had. It reminds me how big of a New York population Temple had, considering that they had phone lines and things set up in Paley Library and in Tuttleman Learning Center for people to try to get, you know, reach their families and check if everything was okay. And again, it made you realize that it made you think about somebody other than yourself without question. And again, luckily, as we stand here 9 years later, there hasn't been a major attack or any kind of domestic attack since. And we have to be thankful for that. And, you know, you can say, listen, I don't want to get into a political debate. But, you know, George Bush, for all the things that he didn't do, or for what he said that he didn't do, you have to give him credit for that one. You have to give him that one. There has been nothing, no attacks ever since, and hopefully it stays that way for as long as I live, you live, and our grandkids, and so on. So, again, September 11th is a date, again, probably the most famous date in the history of mankind. I can't say enough for the soldiers who are serving because of September 11th. Yeah, I mean, that's how, you know, this thing, this Afghan, Iraqi, all this was the genesis this was the genesis of all, you know, of the war, basically, in Iraq and going over to Afghanistan and things like that nature. Of course, you can't say enough for the people, you know, domestically, the police officers in New York, fire departments, the firemen and firemen and women in New York. I mean, you can't say enough about what they did, what they sacrificed, everything, their lives, everything that they did in order to help, you know, stem the tide, so to speak, of that particular day. And you talk about heroes, and again, I get, you know, it kind of ticks me off sometimes when athletes are put in a heroic sense and regarded as popular heroes. Athletes are not heroes. Athletes are just, you know, ordinary people with extraordinary talents. Those guys, men and women, are the heroes. When you're willing to die for something that you believe in, and die for something, and put your life on the line for somebody else's, that's heroic. So again, New York City really stood up and stood out during that particular time period, and you can't say enough about New York City from that standpoint, and really everything, Giuliani did what he had to do. You have to give him credit, love or hate him. I've never been a big Giuliani fan myself, but again, he was, he stood out during that particular time for his leadership. So again, September 11th that will be a date that will, never forget. I'm sure this weekend, particularly the day that you're going to get a ton of stuff on it. I'm sure they'll have events at the games, maybe a flag half staff, tributes and so forth, and deservedly so. I mean, you have to acknowledge this particular day. Again, something that will never, ever be forgotten. But to the sports we go. When we come back, we're going to get into some college football. Three games, six teams. This day could change college football for this season. This is the first major Super Saturday of the college football season. We'll get into that. And I'll tell you, and we'll get into how one call changed the face of college football. We'll talk about that and much, much more. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, again, taking you for 90 minutes this morning till 10:30. You can hit me up at twitter.com/WilliamGerald. You can also hit me up at facebook.com/CyrilQuinn. Remember, the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call poll question, we will have that later. That's a little tease for you. We'll have that later. If you've been on my page, you already know what it is. But for those who haven't, we'll certainly get to that later. 9:12 in the a.m. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, September 11th, 2001, 13 minutes after the 9 o'clock hour. Of course, Kyle, with the NFL kicked off on Thursday night. You'll have a full complement and full weekend of games on Sunday and Monday. And of course, culminating Monday night with the doubleheader of Baltimore at New York, Kansas City at San Diego. But the college kids take center stage today as you have three matchups, six teams who between them all have won multiple national championships, six of the most just storied and decorated programs in college football history, and we'll begin with Ohio State, Miami. And again, Lou, I will do my predictions on these games a little later in the program, but when you think about this Ohio State Miami game, you cannot help but to think about the 2002 National Championship, Sun Devil Stadium. It was in Arizona, and Miami's going to that game number one in the country, going for a second straight undefeated season. They had crushed Nebraska the previous year at the Rose Bowl in the national championship game. And a game that Nebraska has no business being in the first place, but that's another story. And look what happened to the programs after that game. Double overtime loss. They lose to Ohio State 31-24, double overtime. Everybody remembers the Terry Porter call, pass interference that had not been called. The game was over. Miami was already celebrating on the field. That's the ironic thing, to watch a team's dream just get snatched away in roughly in about 5 minutes. And, you know, if Miami wins that game, think about that. If Miami wins that game, they go back-to-back national championships. They're on the cusp. They had a machine rolling at Miami during that particular time. That 2001 team was considered one of the great teams of all time, one of the best teams, team of the decade of the 2000s, one of the best college football teams in the last 15, 20 years. I mean, they had, Bye-bye Clayton Portis, hello Willis McGahee, bye-bye Willis McGahee, hello Frank Gore, bye-bye Jeremy Shockey, hello Kellen Winslow Jr., bye-bye Ed Reed, hello Sean Taylor, the late Sean Taylor. I mean, that's the kind of talent they had during that particular time. And they were clearly on top of college football. But it all changed with that one call. And again, Miami people have not forgotten, will never forget that call. I mean, it cost you, when you have a call of that magnitude, it was a bad call. It was not the worst call I've ever seen, but it was in a championship situation. And BCS, in the BCS, ever since we've gone to the BCS format of championships, that's the worst call. That is the worst call ever from a BCS standpoint. You know, you can't make that call during that time, during that particular point of the game, to cost the team a championship. And, Miami has not been a factor in terms of, from a national standpoint since. They have not played a meaningful game in January since that particular game. I mean, they've had games, they played January 1st games. They've beaten a couple of ranked teams here and there, but they have not had a signature win, and they have not played in a game, a meaningful national championship caliber, and a meaningful game for Miami in January is a national championship. When you've won 5 championships, that's a meaningful game for the Miami program. So Miami after that was not a major factor, while Ohio State, ever since that game, Ohio State, with the exception of 1 year, Ohio State has been either in a championship game, in a BCS game. They had 1 year where they were like 8-4, 9-3, 8-4, where they played in the Alamo Bowl and lost. And that's probably, I think, it was maybe 2004, I would say. And you can criticize Ohio State for getting, beaten by some of the other teams. Beaten by the SEC teams like LSU, like a Florida, even by like a USC. But they've been there. The point is they've been in contention right there year in and year out. I mean, there's a parallel between all these 6 teams. With the exceptions that I would say Alabama, look at Oklahoma. You look at Oklahoma and Ohio State, they're 2 teams that have year in, year out been in contention, won a championship since 2000, but get criticized because they've had a tendency of losing big time bowl games once they get to the big time BCS games. I mean, Oklahoma gets blown out by USC. Oklahoma has loses to Boise State a couple years ago. No, we just talked about Ohio State. I mean, you look at Florida State, Miami, 2 programs that were once had dominant eras. Florida State in the 90s, Miami, of course, in the 80s, and certainly in the early 2000s before that Ohio State loss. They're trying to get back on top of that hill, trying to get back to, trying to really catch up with Florida, who has dominated for the better part of this decade, that state. You know, Florida State, Oklahoma, played for a championship, you know, at the beginning of that, you know, back in 2001. Oklahoma and Miami had battles in the 80s. You know, Jimmy Johnson, Barry Switzer. Alabama, Penn State, of course, has you know, Bear Bryant, Joe Paterno. Very good article on Joe Paterno. Very insightful on New York Times. And basically had Paterno, you know, people want to know why Joe Paterno is not retired. Well, Bear Bryant, you know, died, I believe, a couple of weeks after he retired from college football. Bear Bryant passed away at the age of 69. And, you know, there's a thought process that Joe Paterno is fearful of that, that he will have no life after football, and football is his life. And, you know, he's kind of, you know, that's something that stuck out to him when it happened. You get a very good article written by Mark Vera, New York Times, it was written September 8th. And again, he died, Bear Bryant died a couple of weeks after he retired. Bryant and Paterno had some battles during his time at Alabama. Bryant retired after the 1982 season, was undefeated against Joe Paterno, of course, had that in his career. So all these teams basically have some type of connection when you look at it. And again, this Saturday will set the tone for college football. There's no question about it. This Saturday will set the tone for college football. Miami, Florida State both have something to prove. Alabama's trying to, you know, keep their hopes alive, of course, for a repeat national championship. This could be an elimination game for, say, Oklahoma and Ohio State. Certainly Miami and Florida State, if they have championship hopes, cannot lose this game. I don't think neither Miami or Florida State are championship caliber this year, but they're on their way back. So, again, a big-time Saturday as far as college football goes. Only thing I have a problem with is you get Alabama, Penn State games in prime time on ESPN at 7 p.m. But you're going to have Florida State, Oklahoma, Ohio State, Miami on basically at the same time. Depending on where you stay at, depending on where you live, one game will be on ABC, the other game will be on ESPN2. At the same time, one game starts at 3:30. Ohio State, Florida State game starts at 3:30. Ohio State, Miami starts at 3:40. I mean, trying to switch back and forth, you can't really get a great feel of what's going on in the game when you're doing that. I understand games. It's a busy Saturday of college football. A lot of other games as well. And I know 3:30 is a hot time slot for games on, but college football has to find a way to make that fan friendly, better viewer friendly for for the football junkies like myself and others. So that's the only thing that annoys you about it. But again, we'll find a way to make it happen. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Of course, football, NFL football has started Thursday night. You have Minnesota and New Orleans. We'll talk about that game. We'll talk about some of the issues that the Vikings have. Friday night baseball. The NL West gets tighter, and the Rangers outlast the Yankees. We'll talk about that as well. And we also have NFL picks, our first edition of NFL picks. We have a slate of good games. We'll talk about that. We have some U.S. Open, also some college picks. A busy program on this Saturday, September 11th. Back after this. Welcome back to the Saturday morning wake-up call. 25 minutes after the 9 o'clock hour. Of course, taking you for a full 90 minutes, 10:30, as well as I'm doing some overtime this morning on this first full weekend of NFL and college football. Of course, college football kicked off last weekend. The NFL kicked off this Thursday, of course, with the New Orleans Saints opening defense of their Super Bowl championship. The team that they put out in the NFC Championship, the Minnesota Vikings. New Orleans gets by Minnesota 14-9 in a game that, to say, was uneventful, I guess would be an understatement. The game started out good, and it started out, you know, seeming like it was going to be a fast-paced game with New Orleans scoring right away. But after that, I mean, it got, you know, after that, Minnesota, you know, quietly kind of got back into the game. New Orleans blew a couple opportunities as far as missed field goals. They didn't take advantage of a Brett Favre turnover, and Minnesota, to its credit, Minnesota took the early haymaker from New Orleans, stabilized the game with a field goal, and took the lead at the end towards the latter part of the half with the Brett Favre, Asante Shenko touchdown pass, extra point was blocked, and Minnesota was up 9-7 at halftime, but could not get anything going in the second half as Brad Childress, and this is why you cannot trust Minnesota in a big spot. First half, now listen, we all know how rusty Brett Favre is right now. No training camp, you know, to me, throwing passes to high school players doesn't constitute, you know, it's not the same. It's not training camp. It's not running offense. It's not getting the rhythm with your receivers. No sitting, of course, he has no sitting rights. So, I mean, it was clear that their passing game was limited. I give Brad Childress credit first half. He ran the ball a ton. Adrian Peterson had 12 carries in the first half for about 60-some odd yards. Had a big first half. Second half, for some reason, Childress wants to try to get far in rhythm. So they want to throw the ball basically on every down. Minnesota ran the ball only. Peterson only got 7 carries at halftime in a game that was within one score the entire game. I mean, the biggest separation between the two teams was 7 points when New Orleans scored the opening touchdown. I mean, that was a game that was tailor-made for Adrian Peterson to get 25 to 30 carries. And Adrian Peterson is at 6'1", 215, 220 pounds. He's built for that. I mean, the guy's a horse. And he was ripping up Minnesota, ripping up New Orleans' defense. So for some reason, they got away from the running game, and New Orleans did. New Orleans went in reverse. I mean, New Orleans' first half did not, you know, didn't run the ball, ran the ball 3 times. Second half, they run the ball 22 times. Now, you look at their stats, 25 carries, 75 yards. No, that's only about 3.2 yards a carry, but it's not even so much. It's not about the yards. It's about the opportunities that those carries created for play action. And frankly, it wore down Minnesota's defense. New Orleans was able to run out the clock with the last possession in the fourth quarter. Peterson ended up with 19 carries for 87 yards. By my math, that's almost 5 yards a carry. Again, I don't want to get... Two things that came from that game. I mean, three things. Number one, both of these teams, you could tell that they were fresh out of the preseason because, again, this game was not well played at all. It was not a very well played game. A little bit sloppy. You know, guys dropping passes. Not a lot of turnovers. Only had one turnover. Should have had more on both teams. And both teams blew opportunities to have to generate multiple turnovers. But you know, you could tell that was the opening day, opening night of NFL football. And these Thursday night games that open the season, they have not been the greatest. I mean, I know last year you had went to overtime with Tennessee and Pittsburgh, but the Washington Redskins Giant game was bad. You've had a couple of stinkers in some of these games. Oh, maybe the New England Indianapolis game when they first started back in 2004 was a very good game. That's been about it as far as teams looking crisp and looking like they're in mid-season form. That's the first thing that came about. Number two, and this was the biggest thing that came out of the game, is Minnesota's lack of a vertical passing game. I mean, Sidney Rice, now I heard a lot about Sidney Rice last year. Brett Favre made him. And, you know, Sidney Rice, one year, we'll see about next year. They need Sidney Rice. You know, there's a reason why the value of a big-time wide receiver has went up tenfold in the NFL over the last decade. You cannot. The NFL is a passing game right now. Just look at last year with all the 4,000-yard passes. The quarterback ratings are as high as ever. As high as it's been in the last 10 years. You know, you cannot win without being able to throw the ball. That's all it is to it. You got to be able to spread these defenses out with three or four receivers. You got to have a guy to stretch the field. And Sidney Rice, again, the Percy Harvins, the Brent Berrymans of the world, they look good when they're in space or have one-on-one coverage. You put them as primary targets, then, I mean, they're not effective. They look very mediocre to average. They could not get any separation during over the course of that game. So, Sidney Rice is going to be out for about, they say, 8 weeks. They better hope he comes back sooner than that. It's going to be either that, or they're going to have to get a heavy dose of Adrian Peterson. And that's why I didn't understand about the second half of the play calling from Brad Childress. Third thing is Minnesota. For all the talk about the New Orleans offense. The New Orleans offense has been, since Breeze and Sean Payton got to New Orleans, they've had the best offense in football without question over these 4 years. Their offense looks average against Minnesota. I mean, even last year in the championship game, they scored the majority of those points off short fields because Minnesota had 6 turnovers. Minnesota's defense does as well as any defense in the league at defending New Orleans' offense. Even in that particular game when they're missing, you know, Cedric Griffin, they're playing with guys who are playing out of position at safety. And New Orleans had a couple guys running free at the beginning of the game. But as over the course of the game, you know, their secondary stepped up. Their front seven, you know, basically neutralized New Orleans' running game, running attack for the most part. And Breeze was average in that game. I know he had 237 yards, but he's not played. He played, you know, they kept him in check. He had one touchdown pass, no interceptions. And basically kept everything in front of them. Did a great. And you hold this. You hold New Orleans to 14 points. You're doing something at home at New Orleans. Then that you're playing great defense. So those are the three things to me that stood out from that game. Also, and another thing before the game, you had for some reason the players from both teams giving out a gesture before the. I think it was right before the national anthem. Both players walked on the field with their right index fingers raised in the air. Now, to somehow signify that they are one, that they're in it together. Like, I mean, to me, this thing made absolutely no sense. It will have zero effect on the upcoming negotiations as the NFL tries to avoid a work stoppage in 2011. it would have zero effect. This idea that the players are trying to, what, get the fans on their side? I mean, what exactly are they trying to accomplish? What were the players exactly trying to accomplish with this? I don't know. Some of these players are lost when it comes to this thing. I'll read you a quote from Giants defensive end Matthias Kiwanuka. If the fans could see the players' positions, they might be able to have an actual influence on the process. Okay, really. I'll get to that in a second here. They probably have a bigger voice than they understand they do, Kiwanuka said. So the fans are against the lockout and come out and support the players and are in our side. They can probably do a lot more than they think they can as far as avoiding that situation. Okay, let's see here. If the fans come out to the games, first of all, if they come to the games, they're putting money, not only putting money in your pockets, but they're putting money in the owner's pockets. If they buy your jersey, they're putting money, again, in the owner's pockets. A fan has no effect on this thing. You know, fans, if I'm a season ticket holder, and I decide to give up my season tickets, yes, that's going to hurt the owner. That will affect the owners from their pockets, from their financially, but it's also going to affect the players. The owners pay the players. The revenue that's generated through television contracts, through merchandising, that money pays the players. There's no way a fan can affect the player, can affect an owner without affecting the players. I mean, that is one of the most idiotic and moronic statements that you ever hear. But let's be honest. If there's no football, the players, the players are going to save up. The owners have thought this thing out through and through. They have television deals already sealed up for 2011 from CBS, from Fox, from ESPN. Multi-billion-dollar deals in terms of revenue that they will already be receiving regardless if there's football in 2011 or not. Players don't have that. A fan has no impact whatsoever on this situation. Zero. There's nothing a fan can do to hurt the owner, again, without hurting the players. If a fan goes to a game and starts cheering, we hate the owners, you know what, if you're the owner saying, okay, but you know what, how much did you pay for that ticket? How much did you pay for that hot dog? How much did you pay for that beer? How can a fan affect the owner and not the player? You know what fans see? And I've been, for the most part, on the player's side myself. A couple things about the players that can be changed, about the players and how that can be changed up, you know, as far as the guaranteed contract situation, some things of that nature. For the most part, I'm fully with the players as far as they deserve the majority of the revenue. They're out there playing. We've gone through this, you know, countless times on this program about, you know, if this deal was so bad, why did the owners sign it in the first place? So, you know, I've been on the side of players. But you know what fancy billionaires arguing with millionaires. That's what they see. Fans are not sympathetic towards the players. Please. And especially with some of the behavior that's taken place off the field by football players in the last five to ten years, especially in the last 5 years, basically the entire Cincinnati Bengals team, you know, Pac-Man Jones, Plexico Burris, Michael Vick, just to say the least. Tank Johnson. Now, Giant, and not to say that all the players are clueless. Here's what Giant, defensive end, Uso Umeyora said, and he kind of brought some sense back into this situation. I think it's important for everybody to know what's going on, what the issues are. Umeyora said, because from the outside looking in, it could probably seem like two groups of people who are making a bunch of money, who are squabbling over semantics. So I think it's important for people to know that nobody wants to get the short end of the stick here, because I see where the owners are coming from, I see where the owners are coming, and I see where the players are coming from also. Okay? Makes sense. And there's more to this situation, and I make the statement, billionaires versus millionaires, there's much more to it than that. I'm just saying what fans, what a lot of fans probably will see, meaning that they will have no sympathy for either the owners or the players. But then, I mean, they have a ton of issues on the table. They have more issues than they've ever had. And a lot of stuff they have to get ironed out. But the idea that a fan that, you know, getting fans to take the players trying to get the fans to take their side and try and with this, you know, ridiculous gesture, it makes no sense. If I'm an owner, I would have been, you know, okay, let them, you know, they want, what are they going to do? What is that going to do? If I'm an owner, I wouldn't have a second thought about that. Not a second. I would have lost zero sleep over that particular gesture. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We still have NFL picks on the way. And I'll bet first we'll get into some Friday night baseball. And we'll also talk about the Cy Young race in the American League. I'm going to clear some things up with that. That's still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Welcome back to the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, 42 minutes after the 9 o'clock hour. Of course, I'll be taking you up. I'll be taking you to the bottom half of the 10 o'clock hour, 10:30. We're going 90 minutes today on this special football edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. But we're going to break it up a little bit and get into some baseball, because despite, you know, contrary to popular belief, and contrary to where everybody thinks, where everybody is seeing, there's still some baseball being played. I know football, this is a tough time for baseball, because football comes in and just, you know, swallows the sports conscience and takes over. And that, I mean, that's how football, you know, and I love baseball as my favorite sport, but football is the national pastime. There's no getting around that. But in baseball, you have some kind of races that are heating up. It's going to begin, of course, San Diego and San Francisco. San Francisco goes to San Diego, takes out the Padres for a second straight game of their four-game series, 1-0. Jose Uribe, again, another big hit, gives sacrifice ground ball. To give San Francisco the 1-0 shutout. Jonathan Sanchez started it, and Brian Wilson finished it. As far as the shutout goes, Brian Wilson, you know, finished the game with a strikeout. The Giants are basically in a deadlock with San Diego. They have one less loss and one more win. Two more games, to go. They'll have Bumgarner pitching for them today, and they'll have Lincecum tomorrow. I thought the Giants, you know, they play San Diego seven times. They play San Diego five more times. I thought that out of the seven games that they were going to play them in, that they needed to get five out of seven and three out of four this series, and they're 1 win away from that. How about Juan Uribe? Juan Uribe, again, not a great player, has had a pretty decent career. He's gotten so many big hits. Last night, and it was a tremendous play by him. First and third, one out. He hits a ground ball. It looks like it's going to be an inning. This is what I believe the bottom of the eighth inning. Looks like it's going to be an inning-ending double play. They get the force out at second, and he beats out the double play at first base. The run scores, and that's your only run. I mean, this guy, again, he had a big hit, had the home run against the Dodgers last week to get the Giants a win. That was a big game for him when they were down 5-4 to nothing. And he's been the MVP over the last 6 weeks without question. Again, I give the Giants a lot of credit. I mean, it looked like the Giants at 6.5 out were scrapping and were dead in the water. Their pitching was bad. All of a sudden, their starters are getting everybody out now. And Lincecum has returned to form. Sanchez has pitched well. Kane was great on Thursday night. So, you have two teams going in opposite directions. You know, San Diego is going to mess around here and not be even and totally fall out the race. They're going to fall out. Not only this race, they're going to fall out the wild card race as well. Besides the Giants, they also have Colorado right on their heels. Colorado, again, seems to annually do this August, September run they have. They have won eight straight games. They're only 2.5 games out. They have two of the hottest hitters in baseball right now, Troy Tulowitzki and Carlos Gonzalez. Carlos Gonzalez leads the league, and of course, batting average and also RBIs, and is second in home runs. He's still in the race for the Triple Crown. Probably won't get it because Pujols, I think, will lead the National League in home runs. But he's been hitting like close to 500 over the last month. And Troy Tulowitzki ran a couple of homers last night as Colorado ran over Arizona 13-4. Has been on 8 home runs in 9 games. He has homered 8 home runs in nine games. He's been tremendous as well. Colorado, again, does this every, it seems like for the last 3 or 4 years, they've done this every single year when they just make this last season push. I would not be surprised if you had a situation where it was Colorado and San Francisco on a Monday after the season ended for a one-game playoff. It would not shock me in the least that both these teams play it well right now. Also, you had Cincinnati get a win, defeat Pittsburgh in extra innings 4-3. Cincinnati pushed their lead over St. Louis, who lost to Atlanta 8-6, 2-6 games. I don't think St. Louis is going to make the playoffs. Forget about winning the division. That's done. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs myself. Tampa Bay edged out Toronto despite Jose Bautista's 2 home runs. He now has a major league leading 46 home runs. We'll see if he can get to 50. Tampa Bay cuts the Yankee lead to a game and a half. Yankees fell to the Rangers 6-5 in 13 innings, but both teams are going to the playoffs, so that's not as big. If you are thinking that's important, the team that's paying attention to that is Minnesota Twins, because they don't want any part of the Yankees in the playoffs, at least before the American League Championship Series. Right now, as it currently stands, the Yankees would play the Rangers, and the Twins would play Tampa Bay. So, Tampa Bay, if you're the Twins, you want the Yankees to win that division so you can avoid them until the League Championship Series. Chicago kept their faint hopes alive, defeated Kansas City 4-3. Minnesota lost to Cleveland. So Minnesota's lead in the American League Central is 5 games. But again, 2 games. Again, the magic rule of thumb in baseball in terms of these races are 2 games and more. If you have a 2-game lead in September, you're in pretty good shape. 5 games is five games would be a collapse if Chicago were to try to catch Minnesota. So Minnesota is in very good shape with that. The Phillies, of course, defeat the Mets. Willie Holiday finally gets win number 18, 8-4 over the Mets. With the Braves losing, the Phillies looking good, very good shape for that division for the National League East. While you have Atlanta, who's struggling to maintain their lead in the wild card race. During that, man, those are the races. I mean, listen, the American League wild card race is over. The American League West race is over. The National League Central race is over. So you have the National League East, the National League West, National League wild card, and the American League East, which really really does not have major importance as far as who is and who is not going to make the playoffs. There's been a strong push in this week in particular, in the last couple of weeks, for Felix Hernandez getting the American League Cy Young. Felix Hernandez, since the All-Star break, has been the best pitcher in baseball. He had a losing record, okay? He's 4-5 during that time, but his ERA is like 1.32. They don't score any runs for him. I mean, Seattle is one of the most anemic offensive teams in baseball. He's 11-10, has about 2.3 ERA. He leads the majors in strikeouts and innings pitched. The problem I have with Felix Hernandez winning the Cy Young is, number one, CeCe Sabathia has 19 wins. Felix Hernandez has 11. You want to say, CeCe Sabathia is on the Yankees score. That's fine. But CeCe Sabathia, it's not like CeCe Sabathia's ERA is 10. It was about 3.14 ERA, a little bit over 3. And Sabathia has done it with none of the other Yankee starters doing anything. He's been the only Yankee starter in the last 6 weeks or so that's been consistent. I mean, Burnett up and down, Pettis been injured. Phil Hughes has struggled a bit. So Sabathia has had to basically carry that Yankee pitching staff on his shoulders. And, Felix Hernandez, again, to me, when you don't have the win total, you have to dominate in other categories. He doesn't lead the league in any other major categories with the exception of strikeouts. I mean, when you talk about terms of ERA and whip is walks, hits, innings, walks and hit versus innings, pitch is a big pitching statistic that people look at. Also, batting average against, he doesn't lead the American League in that. I mean, last year, people were criticized, Zach Greinke won the Cy Young with 16 wins. Zach Greinke led the majors in ERA, ERA. Led the American League in WHIP. So when you don't have a high win total, you have to dominate in other areas where you have to be just far superior to any other pitcher and Felix Hernandez is not that. So I don't see how you could take him over CeCe Sabathia in terms of the Cy Young. I don't see how you can do it. But again, and I love Hernandez. He's a great pitcher. He's 24, 35 years old, one of the youngest 1,000 strikeouts. If you were starting a team right now, you would be hard pressed to take anybody in baseball over Felix Hernandez. Maybe Lincecum. A hefty Steven Strasburg before he got hurt, but Felix Hernandez is that good, but he should not win the American League Cy Young Award, despite the fact that he has been the best pitcher in baseball in the second half. Coming up on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, Week 1 in a league where no contract is guaranteed. We'll be back with NFL picks, and we'll also talk about some U.S. Open as well on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Welcome back to the latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn. And finally, the NFL is here, week one. NFL picks week one in the league where no contract is guaranteed. And we're going to begin down in Pittsburgh, the Steel City. Falcons taking on the Steelers. Of course, you know the story. Steelers, no Ben Roethlisberger. Jets to the Jets, to the New York Jets. Willie Colon. Of course, he's out for the season. Steelers coming to this game with some question marks early. Certainly a lot of question marks will be answered when Ben Roethlisberger returns after his four-game suspension. The line 2.5 Atlanta, as well as they should be 2.5-point favorites. Dennis Dixon, of course, will struggle. Atlanta Falcons, of course, a lot of people are very high on the Atlanta Falcons as far as not only making the playoffs, but possibly even making a Super Bowl run. I don't think I'm quite there with the Atlanta Falcons, but I do think that they will have a bounce-back season. And I do think that they will make the playoffs. But again, I'm not thinking that they're going to take the steps to reach the Super Bowl. We'll see. But you look at this game in particular. One, again, this is a golden opportunity for Atlanta to win a non-conference game, a out-of-conference game on the road. Anytime you can start off the season with a win on the road, it goes a lot. It goes a lot in your favor as you have eliminated one of your road games, and now again certainly you have a chance to start off at two and zero. Considering that Atlanta will be at home next week against Arizona. So Atlanta could be looking at 2-0 here. Derek Smithson again will start. And I believe when I look at this game, a couple of things. Number one, I think Dixon will struggle. I think there will be moments during the season where Derek Dixon, before Roethlisberger gets back, where Derek Dixon will be spectacular. He'll have a 40-50-yard touchdown run. He'll get away from a couple of defenders and throw a 50-yard touchdown and throw a 40-50-yard touchdown pass, down the field. But the problem with Derek Dixon is that he really doesn't have a big-time arm. And the strength of the Steelers right now, to me, offensively, is a Mike Wallace who can stretch the field. That really doesn't add up when you have a quarterback who can stretch the field compared to having a receiver who is a speed receiver and a guy in Mike Wallace who led the league in yards per catch. Mike Wallace last year averaged 19 yards per reception. So I think this will be a very close game. I think in the fourth quarter, the Steelers defense will keep them in this game. But I could see Atlanta winning down Pittsburgh, and I could see Ben Dixon committing a costly turnover and to allow Atlanta to escape with the victory. Atlanta take the points in this game. I like Atlanta by at least 7. Again, I think this is a game in the fourth quarter, but I will take the Atlanta Falcons on the road at Heinz Field. Game number two. Indianapolis at Houston. The line 2.5. Couple numbers to keep in mind. Peyton Manning, 15-1 all time against the Houston Texans. He has 37 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. So he's owned the Houston Texans in his career. A couple of people like Houston in this game. I don't. I might as well bring it up now because about our Saturday morning wake up call poll. I did a poll on my Facebook page. Again, you can go to facebook.com/Cyril Quinn. I did a poll and I asked the question, who's going to win the Super Bowl? So I put the teams up there. I have Green Bay, New Orleans, Baltimore. Even put Dallas up there. I didn't want to, but fair is fair. had Dallas up there. I don't think I put Minnesota. I don't think I put the Vikings. I might have had the Vikings. I think I'm leaving. I had the Steelers, Chargers. So I had about six. I had about six teams. You know, I'm getting ready for the program today, and I look up, and I'm saying, when I started doing this, picking these games, I said, you know what? I forgot about Indianapolis. And at worst, they should have been the second team I put up there behind New Orleans. I mean, you know, that's the thing about it. That's a, you forget. They've been so consistent for over so many years, seven straight seasons of 12 wins or more, that you forget how good they are, and you forget, and you shouldn't forget, they have the biggest star in the sport, in Peyton Manning. But Indianapolis will be right there as far as winning, as far as getting to a Super Bowl and winning a championship. Their offense is going to be as good as it's ever been. Peyton Manning's weapon, Peyton Manning, from a passing standpoint, they will struggle at running the ball. They're going to try to deal with that. To me, they're going to use a pass to step them up. They are a passing team. Peyton Manning with a healthy Anthony Gonzalez back, the development of Austin Colley, Pierre Garçon, Dallas Clark, Reggie Wayne. He has more weapons on the outside now. Since you got to go back probably to the 2003 season when he had, you know, Marvin Harrison in his prime, Reggie Wayne, you know, Dallas Clark, and Edgerrin James even catching passes out the backfield. He has as many weapons now as he's ever had, and I expect Manning to have. He could have a year where he throws 40 touchdown passes. I mean, I really expect him to have a huge year. And again, Houston, no Brian Cushing, out for the 4-game suspension. No Dante Robinson. I like Indianapolis in the shootout, 38-28. I could see 38-28. These games have been close for the better part, in the last couple of years. Houston always finds a way to lose, though, in terms of making they either break down the fourth quarter or they either have a turnover that turns the tide and turns the game around. But again, it is one of these things where I will believe it when I see it. I trust in these big games. I trust Indianapolis a lot more. I'll take Indianapolis with the points again, 38-28 over the Texans. Game number three. My upset special of the week, and again, I might be reaching with this, but you know what? When you pick an upset, you have to reach a little bit. Oakland at Tennessee. Tennessee is a 6-point favorite, as well as they should be. Oakland comes in having given up last year 155 yards rushing per game, 155 yards, and they go into Tennessee facing a guy in Chris Johnson, who was coming off a year where he rushed, of course, for over 2,000 yards, set the all-time record for all-purpose yards with 2,500 yards in terms of all-purpose. I want you to keep this in mind before, and I'll get back to this game about 2,000 yard rushers and what they've done following the year they've ran for 2,000 yards. Barry Sanders in 97, 2,000 yards, NFL MVP, averaged 6.1 yards per carry. Following year, 98, his last year, ironically, 1,491 yards, 4.3 yards a carry. Good year, very good, I mean, great year for most running backs, but again, 6.1 yards to 4.3 yards a carry. Jamal Lewis, following his 2003 season, following his 2,000-yard season, 1,000 yards, 4.3 yards a carry, only played 12 games, missed a couple games due to injury. Terrell Davis, 98, only played in at least two games, tore his knee up, had 211 yards, was never the same after that season. Never the same. His career basically was finished after the 2,000-yard season. Eric Dickerson, the all-time leader for a single season in terms of yards rushing at 2105, averaged 5.6 yards that season in 1984. Following season 85, 1,234 yards, 4.2 yards a season. O.J. Simpson, 74, and 73, I should say, over 2,000 yards rushing, averaged 6 yards a carry in 73, 2,003 yards. And remember, he did this in a 14-game season. 6 yards a carry. Following season in 74, 1,125 yards, 4.2 yards a carry. Are you sensing a trend here? Keep this in mind, especially for fantasy owners of Chris Johnson. I think the Raiders are much improved on defense. They drafted Alvonzo McClain, the All-American out of Alabama. They picked up John Henderson for a 1-year contract, bargain basement. I think they're much improved. I love the acquisition, of course, of one Jason Campbell to stabilize their passing attack. You know, Jason Campbell is a major, to say at least major upgrade over Jamarcus Russell. Again, I like the feel of this Raiders team. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but again, I can see, again, week one, if you're going to pick an upset, week one is the week that the upsets normally take place. At Tennessee, again, I know it's a stretch, but again, I like the Raiders. I say it'll be a close game, 20-17, will not be high scoring. I still have question marks about Tennessee's passing attack, about their receivers, and about Vince Young still has, to me, to prove that he can have a full season, okay, full season of playing Pro Bowl caliber and consistent football. I know he came in, it was great that he came in when the team was 0-7, 0-8, and played well down the stretch when the season basically was over. Let's see what he has. Let's see how he performs under pressure at the beginning of the season. Again, I expect Chris Johnson. I think that they will hold Chris Johnson in check. I think he'll get. I will predict that he will not have 100 yards in this game. How about that? When we return, we will have our game of the week on this NFL edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call NFL Picks. First week of NFL Picks on the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. When we return, again, game of the week. Welcome back to the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. NFL picks week one in the league where no contract is guaranteed. Game of the week, Monday Night Football. And no, I'm not talking about Kansas City, San Diego. The Baltimore Ravens travel up north, 95 north, to the New Meadowlands. Well, the Giants would have already played a game in it. That following Sunday, but the Jets and Giants is no longer Giants Stadium. It's the Maryland. It is the Maryland. So even though the Giants are, even so, there is no more. It's still the little brother aspect that the Jets have when it comes to the Giants. They'll always be the little brother in New York, but at least they have a place of their own as far as it being 50-50 from that standpoint. Baltimore travels to New York. The line is 3, Jets being a field goal favorite, which basically is like picking them. It's like a pick them. The 3 points are because of the fact that they're at home. Some trash talking that went on before this game. Yeah, Antonio Camardi say that, you know, with the Miami Heat football, a lot of stars, everybody hating on us, whatever. Ray Lewis saying, hey, if you're there to Heat, then we're the Lakers. You know, they haven't won anything. I'm tired of hearing about the Jets. And I lean towards Ray Lewis. I've had enough. It's only September. I've already had enough of the Jets. You know, between the Hard Knocks program, Rex Ryan, the Revis contract, which could have been ended months ago. I mean, months ago, that deal he signed was no more than a deal that they were going to put on the table originally. When these players realize that they have no leverage, then we won't even go through all this soap opera drama of holdouts. But anyway, Baltimore to me is a ready-made Super Bowl team. Again, their defense is not what it once was. It's not dominant, but you know what? it does not have to, at this point, it doesn't have to be dominant because their offense this year is going to be flat out sick. They already had one of the best running games in football last year. And is there a better running attack that, are there three better runners that complement each other better than Ray Rice, LaRon McClain, and Willis McGahee, as far as a breakaway guy, the blocking fullback, and a touchdown and a touchdown goal line guy in Willis McGahee. Then you add TJ Houston-Zada, which was a steal, and Anquan Boldin. Now you, along with Todd, I mean, they still have Derek Mason, still have Todd Heat, still have Clayton. I mean, Joe, I think Joe Flacco will have a big year this year. And, you know, I like Baltimore in this game. I just trust Baltimore more than I trust the Jets. I trust Joe Flacco more than Mark Sanchez. Couple of key defensive players that are missing. Baltimore, of course, has no Ed Reed. But the Jets have no Calvin Pace, who was last year their best pure pass rusher. He will be missed. Darrelle Revis, again, we know he's one of the two best quarterbacks in the league. But listen, he has gone through, you know, didn't participate at all in training camp. He could be a little rusty. I mean, if there's a game where you can get Darrelle Revis, this will be the game. And the bottom line is, he cannot cover everybody. And again, I think that Baltimore, you're going to get a heavy dose of the Baltimore rushing attack. I like Baltimore, say 23-16. This will be a very physical game. Again, I've had enough of the Jet talk. I think they will have a rude awakening in game in week one facing a Baltimore team that is primed to get to the Super Bowl. Again, I don't think the Jets are quite there. I don't like a team with all these big-time names, with all these names that, and who knows how they're going to blend as far as chemistry goes. Baltimore, to me, is a more stable and is a more stabilized team as far as leadership goes. You know who the leaders on that team as far as Ed Reed and of course the great Ray Lewis. We don't know who are the leaders on the Jets team. We don't quite know yet. So we'll see how the season plays along. But for week one, I like Baltimore. So, I like Oakland to upset Tennessee, take Atlanta over Pittsburgh to take the points as well, take Indianapolis over Houston, take the points, and take Baltimore. I'm taking Baltimore over the Jets, despite the fact that the Jets are favorite at home and favorite by three. So, three road teams. So, I number three road teams in terms of Oakland, Baltimore, and Atlanta. Well, really, four road teams. I'm taking all the road teams. I didn't just realize that I'm taking all the road teams as far as Indianapolis, Atlanta, Baltimore, and Oakland. I have a feeling that's going to come back and bite me this time come Tuesday morning. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. Again, we're going to have college picks, and I will give you my Super Bowl pick as well. So we're going to have that on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call, 15 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour. We're taking you to the Biohack. We're taking you to 10:30 on this 90-minute edition, this football edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. Welcome back to the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, 16 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour. Surreal Quinn taking you to 10:30. College picks on week two of the college football season. Super Saturday, the first big Saturday of the college football season, certainly the first of many as we try to find out who will play in the national championship game come January. Game number one, we're going down to Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Bryant Denny Stadium, Alabama taking on Penn State. Alabama is favored by 11.5. Again, for Alabama, you have no Marcell Dareus, their top defensive player, and no Mark Ingram, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner. These two teams have not met since 1990. They had an ongoing series from 81 to 1990. Of course, Alabama got the best of that particular series. Bear Bryant, Joe Paterno, you know about the tradition. On paper, you look at this game, you say, well, you know, of course Alabama's going to win. I mean, it's a clear cut. They're number one in the country, return all their major players back offensively. You know, Nick Saban has some great recruiting class as far as the defense goes. They still have a very good defense. And you would thought that this pick would be easy. But I saw something earlier during the week. I saw Joe Paterno at a press conference. And, you know, he's going through his spiel. We're gonna come in, our kids are gonna, you know, we're gonna try, and we're gonna so we'll see what happens. And it was almost smug. I mean, he almost gave off the sense of, listen, I got the sense of that he was thinking about it, that he was thinking like, hey, we're gonna go down there, we're gonna win this game. We know we can win this game. We don't care that they're number one. I don't care that I have a freshman starting quarterback. It seemed like he wanted to say. Of course, he didn't say that. But he gave off an air of confidence that really helped alter this pick. Like, if I'm picking Alabama to win this game, picking Alabama, I've not seen enough out of Penn State to say that they're going to go down in front of 100,000 people, 90,000 people and beat Alabama. I'm not going to say that. But 11.5 points, too many points. This game will be decided in the fourth quarter. I can see Alabama winning 28-21. Penn State will be in this game. Evan Royster, one of the best running backs in the country. Alabama has yet to be tested as far as their defense goes. We know they can put points on the board. We know that they can put points on the board without question. Penn State has a very good defense. Greg McElroy, we'll see what he's made of. Has not played well over the course of his career against ranked opponents. You look at his quarterback rating versus ranked opponents versus non-ranked opponents, a very stark difference. But again, I like Alabama in this game, but I don't like him as much as I did before I saw that Joe Paterno press conference. But we'll see. Florida State versus Oklahoma. Florida State comes in ranked number 617 in the country. Oklahoma's number 8. The line, Oklahoma is a 7.5 point favorite. This is, to me, the game. Look at the teams that have the best chance of upsetting teams. This is the one. I really like Florida State in this game. I'm not in love at all with the Oklahoma defense. I mean, you give up 24 points to Utah State. Utah State had 400 yards passing. And again, I don't dismiss when teams struggle early on against inferior competition. A lot of people want to say, oh, yeah, week one, you know, getting a feed. Well, I don't dismiss it in college football. In NFL is one thing, but in college football, I don't dismiss it at all. You know, when Michigan, look 3 years ago when Michigan lost to Appalachian State. What kind of season did Michigan end up having in that 2007 season? Not very good. So, Florida State comes in with arguably the best offensive line in college football, if not the second best. They're right there. And Florida State has two things going for them in this game. They will have an edge at quarterback, Landry Jones. Landry Jones is not as good as Christian Ponder. And they will have the best unit on the field. The Florida State offensive line will be the best unit on the field. So they have those two things going for them. Oklahoma is going to put up points. You still have question marks about the Florida State defense. We all know Oklahoma has an explosive offense with the receivers, DeMarco Murray, Heisman Trophy candidate, of course, in terms of running back. This will be a shootout without question. But I like Florida State to pull off the upset 35-31. Again, 7.5 points. I think Florida State will make a statement with this game, with this particular game, and get the win. Final game, of course, Miami versus Ohio State. This is a referendum game for me, for both programs, in particular for Miami. I mean, Ohio State, we talked at the top of the program, Ohio State has had great success, you know, since that 2002 national championship game. Miami has not had a definitive win in almost over the course of a decade. Terrell Pryor versus Ja'Cory Harris. You have, you know, Miami's, you know, you'll have Ohio State's offensive line against Miami State, Miami's defensive line. This will be a very close game, but I'm just not quite ready to pick Miami to go to Ohio State and win that type of game. Miami beat Oklahoma last year, but again, that was at home, again, with no Sam Bradford, so I kind of got tossed that aside. I think, to me, the difference in this game is home field. That's the difference as far as I'm concerned. I think otherwise these two teams are basically almost evenly matched. I think that Terrell Pryor will be able to make enough plays to get Ohio State over the top. Again, very close game. I like Ohio State, say 27-21, 27-24. I can see it being, this will be a very close game. Would not be shocked if Miami won this game. But I'm not ready to go there with Miami as far as them picking them to beat a very good Ohio State team at the Horseshoe, at the Horseshoe in front of well over 100,000 people. So there you go. Take Penn State, take Alabama, take Penn State with the points, take Florida State with the outright upset, and I'm taking Ohio State to hold court at home to hold up their end of the bargain at the Horseshoe. So there you go with the college football picks. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, I will give you my Super Bowl pick. I'll tell you why conventional wisdom means nothing as far as where I'm going with this pick. I will give you my Super Bowl pick on coming up on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Welcome back to the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, this final segment of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, 25 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour, as we've gone almost 90 minutes, 5 minutes left, as the program has flew by. My Super Bowl pick, the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call poll question was, who will win Super Bowl 45? That will, of course, take place at Cowboys Stadium in Arlington in front of well over 100,000 people. And to end all the drama, the Cowboys will not be there. So, Cowboys fans, you can do what you want to do. Turn off the station if you want. Your team is not going to be there. I understand that there's been 8 repeat champions in the history of professional football, of the Super Bowl era. Conventional wisdom tells you that it is difficult to repeat. It is difficult to get to the back to that Super Bowl game. It is difficult to even get to the playoffs the following year where you win the Super Bowl. But I think this year is going to be a little bit different. I look at the landscape of the NFC, and I see Green Bay. And, again, Green Bay looks great on paper. It looks great. But they have an explosive. They might have the most explosive offense in football as far as having just complete weapons at every position. You know, tight end, wide receiver, with Aaron Rodgers ready to become a superstar. But I just don't trust. First of all, I don't like the fact that everybody's on the Green Bay bandwagon. I hate that. I hate when everybody's on one particular team. I kind of sort of like to go in the opposite direction when that comes about. And two, the secondary to me is still a question mark. Charles Woodson, I know you just got the 5-year extension, $55 million, but again, Al Harris, who knows when Al Harris will be back. I don't think he's going to miss a lot of time, but again, he's not getting any younger. I told you, Bigby banged back. So I have some questions about Green Bay, though I do think it will have one or two best records in the NFC and will win that division. Don't trust the Cowboys. I've already talked to you about Minnesota. I think last year might have been their year to win the Super Bowl. You look at the AFC. There's not a lot out there in the AFC. Atlanta, are they going to jump from playoffs to winning a Super Bowl? Not impossible, but I don't see them making that big of a jump despite the fact that the year before they made the playoffs. Carolina, Matt Moore, had a nice end of the season, but again, played well when the pressure wasn't on. I want to see him win. Let me see Matt Moore with some expectations. So, to me, I think I almost have to go New Orleans by default, in a way. I think New Orleans will get back to the Super Bowl. I think New Orleans, they'll get Darren Sharper back. They've shown you, based on what they did in the second half of the game, that they're committed to the run, that they can run the football, and they will run the football when they have to. And I like New Orleans. I like New Orleans to take on Baltimore. It was a tough choice between Baltimore and Pittsburgh, but to me, the 4-game suspension will hurt Pittsburgh. Baltimore, I think, will have a better record than Pittsburgh, and I can see Baltimore beat Pittsburgh in the AFC Championship. And I like New Orleans to repeat. Now, again, conventional wisdom says it's not going to happen, but again, I'm going against conventional wisdom, and I'm picking the New Orleans Saints to be the first repeat champion since the New England Patriots did it back in the 2003-2004 season. So I like New Orleans to win the Super Bowl. Of course, tomorrow, remember, for Redskins fans, I will have a special pregame edition of the ceremony wake-up call at 7:30. We'll do 30 minutes on the Redskins preview. Do 30 minutes on Redskins Cowboys as they will battle on Sunday Night Football at around 8:15 on NBC. So if you're a Redskins fan and you didn't hear enough Redskins today, sorry, you will have your chance say tomorrow to get all the Redskins that you need and then some. We'll talk about the NFL as well as week one opens, first full Sunday of week one. I will see you then. So long. Have a great Saturday.